Hello and welcome to the Movies You Forgot You Forgot podcast, the show in which me and my pal, my co-host, Joe Devine, chat about the movies or films that we forgot we'd seen, or we'd even seen in the first place. I've already pre-introduced him, but joining me as ever is my co-host. He's a leaky bucket boy. He's got a big old bucket full of holes. He can't contain information / water. It dribbles right back out again. Here he is.
Buongiorno, mon frère.
Oh, buongiorno, mon frère.
All right.
How's it going?
Yeah, pretty good. Pretty good.
On today's episode, let's just go right into it, yeah? On today's episode, we are doing the 2000, the year 2000.
Yeah.
Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, directed by Ang Lee.
It's Ang Lee, baby.
He's back.
He is back.
It's the Life of Pi's Ang Lee. He's back. How many have we done? Is he the first to get the double director?
I don't know. I could read through the films we've done.
No. Sorry, we've done actors. We've done double actors, but I think this might be our first double director.
Maybe it is.
Which is a shame because obviously Ang Lee, well, you know, he's very well regarded. He directed Brokeback Mountain. One of your faves. Very good film.
Well, I would say as well, I know we'll get into more depth about this, but I think that of the double hitter of Ang Lee that we have had on this podcast, the direction isn't the reason that those films are forgotten. There are other reasons why. Maybe that's a conversation we can have when we chat about Ang Lee. But this is no slight on Ang, because, you know, what a terrific career.
Yeah, and what a good director. And do you know what? That's going to be a great segment. Can you make a note of that?
I absolutely can. He's made so many films, Adam, that a couple of them have been forgotten. Well done, Ang.
Well done, Ang.
Adam is the host now. The dynamic works better when Adam is the host. Adam prefers to be the host. And Joe prefers to be the participant. It's better overall when Adam is the host and Joe is the participant. Let it never be spoken of again. The ghost. 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 The ghost.
Let's talk about who stars in it. Chow Yun-fat. Oh, he's been one of my favourites since the John Woo days of The Killer and Hard Boiled.
Yeah. Good old Chow.
Michelle Yeoh. Who is very much having a moment. Ever since Everything Everywhere All at Once, everyone, it's all Michelle Yeoh this, Michelle Yeoh that. She had a big moment back in 2000 with this, but she's in it. She's very good in this.
Yeah, terrific.
Zhang Ziyi.
This would be...
Ziyi? Zhang Ziyi?
But you can say Zhi, and then it would be Zhang, like with a J and almost.
Oh, Zhang Ziyi.
Zhang almost, yeah.
Zhang, okay. So let's go to the Letterboxd. Well, I'm already there, and I live there, and I will never leave.
No, yeah, you're there already.
It's 120 mins.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah, if it relates to 120 mins.
It doesn't really. Okay. When you were younger, a teenager, in your young, youthful 20s, before you met the fine woman that became your wife, and you were courting, you know, love interests and objects of infatuation, etc. Did you ever display? I'm just thinking about your relationship with Letterboxd. Did you ever display that kind of air of, you know, hopeful desperation that you just lived in hope that something would happen? Do you know what I'm saying?
Oh yeah, that was every single romantic affiliation I think I ever had.
Right,
the
right.
Kind of pathetic.
Please sponsor me. That sort of thing.
Yeah, please see me, sponsor me. I mean, sponsor me in this regard. I wouldn't say sponsor me to a future hopeful love interest. It was
sex me.
Here's a mixtape.
Right.
Here's another mixtape.
Right. Did you do mixtapes?
Yeah.
Okay. What are some of the classics on there? Because mine were very. I can't think specific tracks, but I remember mine were very earnest. You know, and when I would present them, it would always be like, no big deal or whatever. But now, as an adult, I look back and I can see just how obvious it all was. You know.
Bright Eyes or Elliot Smith. Mm.
Or Needle in the Hay. Were you trying to tell them about your penis?
Yeah. No, but it wasn't just that. I'd thrown some of Weezer and the whole high fidelity thing. But I would give them names long on the spine, like an album title. Oh, God.
You came up with your own album titles?
They weren't album titles. It was like...
Like compilation titles.
Yeah, compilation titles.
Do,
like,
do you recall songs, any of them?
Songs to listen to in hope and yearning whilst thinking about, like, the you know, just like that long, like an Explosions in the Sky album. But I wasn't even into Explosions in the Sky back then. But that kind of thing. And there was like the suggestion, there would have been a slight playfulness in there, like to suggest like, oh, I'm not really this earnest, but it was 99% full.
There was a veneer of irony to try to disguise what was weeping out of the cuts in the irony.
The thinnest veneer of irony.
If just anyone a see-through me, irony.
Well, yeah, if anyone dared call me on it, I could go, well, come on, look at that. this is
it's
really
obviously
bad.
That's good. I really like that. Did you draw little album covers?
No, it was all very... No. It was biro,
right.
You know...
Just on the spine.
Writing out obviously the song and the band name, and then on the spine.
And are we talking tape?
Oh, tapes, absolutely tapes.
Yeah.
I even got given mixtapes.
Really?
The ratio of me giving tapes to getting them back suitably is quite poor. But the two I got were the long-term relationships and my first love, which that was a five-year-er.
Wow.
She burned a couple, and then now my now wife.
Yes.
She did me just one.
Just the one. It was all that was needed. Just the one.
But by that point, I was so inured to the idea of giving out mixtapes. I was like, man, whoever that guy was in his early 20s, he needs to die and stop giving girls mixtapes.
Stop bleeding all over everyone.
Stop handing someone a series of songs as if you like wrote them, and as if they can impart meaning about how you feel and yearn to want to go out with them.
They can. Come on.
Well, and yet, I barely. I don't think I would have had a serious, you know, relationship with any of the young women I gave those tapes to.
It's but in terms, you know, serious relationships are different to expressions of emotion. You know, I just got one, and it wasn't a tape, it wasn't a CD. This was in the era of Spotify, you know, in the early days of Spotify. And I think it was reciprocated. I think I'd made someone a playlist and someone was making me a playlist back. And I remember being, you know, quite infatuated with this person at the time. And then I listened to the playlist they made me.
Yeah, and it really turned you off.
And that was it, yeah. I was like, well, this is dog shit, isn't it? It's all covers of songs that I know the original to, obviously, because they're famous. And the originals are much better. And it was all, you know, this is the same with any genre of music in any generation, but there was a particular crop of a generation of London musicians that kind of, that came out, so, you know, around like the turn of, you know, I don't know, 2007, 2008 onwards. Some people from that, I don't want to get talking about Laura Marling again, because I don't, you know, we'll be here forever.
Please. Yeah.
But Laura Marling was part of that. You know, attached to the kind of Noah in the Well. Do you remember Lightspeed Champion?
Oh, yeah.
Loved Lightspeed Champion. He was great, wasn't he?
I liked his the first time I saw him was in his Test Icicles.
Yes, Test Icicles,
With his two buddies. I had one.
And then he became Blood Orange or something. I can't remember what the next bit
is. He's a big sort of big-time sort of songwriter, producer now.
Is he?
He's hooked up with all kinds of... I think he did stuff with Solange.
Good for
Solange
him.
Solange Knowles.
That's nice.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, when that group sort of, that started to turn a bit like Milk, and then there was more electronic influences, and there were some people that kind of came out of that, you know, and it was a lot of these sorts of people. It was like, you know, I don't know, people in their early 20s who'd like heard one Joni Mitchell song or something. And I just remember listening to it and thinking, oh yeah, no, that's not it, is it? That's obviously not it. And that was my only experience of a mixtape. And not that it was given to me with love or anything. I think it was more sort of social reciprocation.
I mean, I feel bad. I feel sorry for the playlist generation, swapping playlists. Like I was on a tape deck. You're pressing down play and record at the same time.
Oh, it was fun, wasn't it?
Oh, those are the days. I want to just kill myself with being old and talking about nostalgia. It's so boring.
Wait, before we move on, because you mentioned it already, High Fidelity, which I don't think could ever feature as a film on this podcast because it just hasn't been forgotten. It's kind of lodged in there. Maybe in 10 years' time, right? But I think, for me, that film also ruined mixtapes. I never read the book, and I don't, you know, my only association with the story is the film. But I remember the tone of it and the parts of the film that are given over to the creation of these mixtapes and the storying of people's lives through these songs and all the chat about like how you alphabetize or not organize your records. It found something surgical and clinical, and it made music feel like a hospital. Do you know what I mean? It ruined them for me.
Yeah, I think they were probably on their way out anyway at that point. But the end of the film and book, the revelation that I think he's called Nick, John Cusack's character, the hero, the realization is that for the first time in his life, he's going to make a mixtape that his girlfriend, or for the person he loves, like for her tastes in music.
That she'll actually like.
Yeah, as opposed to he spent his entire relationship with her up to that point making her mixtapes to kind of educate her and show her like, oh, this is, you need to get into this. This song is great. And then there's this, I'm going to learn how to be a better partner. It's a really nice little ending.
No, that's true. And culminating with one of the great scenes, I think, in film history, Jack Black's rendition of Let's Get It On. That's really good.
Yeah, he's good in that. But yeah, I never took on that lesson. If I was ever to make a mixtape now, it would just be songs that I really, really love that I think anyone should like. And if they don't like them, that's a very bad reflection on them.
That should be what's written on the spine of the tape. Songs you should love, and if you don't, fuck off, right?
Oh, now you're talking. That is the exact name of a playlist. Of a playlist, of a mixtape, of all this. Now, this has got nothing to do with Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. It's 120 mins. Right, that's 2 hours.
That's 2 hours, yeah.
Solid 2 hours.
Yeah.
And it feels like every single one of those mins.
Maybe one or two more thrown in as well. I think maybe it was a lie, you know?
I feel like it felt like watching 140 mins of a film.
Yeah.
I don't want to show my hand too much.
Well,
there's lots to like, but it does feel long.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so to the Letterboxd again. Well, I call the description the Letterboxd, but everything I say is of the Letterboxd. A timeless story of strength, secrets, and two warriors who would never surrender. That's all in caps. I don't think that is what the story's about.
No.
Two warriors in pursuit of a stolen sword and a notorious fugitive are led to an impetuous, physically skilled teenage nobleman's daughter.
Physically skilled.
Physically skilled. Oh, she's physically skilled, all right. Who is at a crossroads in her life. Oh, man. Every week now, I'm just ragging on, we're never going to get the sponsorship. Why don't you read IMDb?
They didn't know. They didn't write it. Don't worry.
Pull it in.
They pull it in. Here it is. IMDb's. Listen,
we all know how good AI is.
Yeah,
right.
We know.
Everyone knows how good
it's
AI
not that good.
Is. It's something that could fix this.
It would do
and
better.
They've not. Yeah. They're not even using it to fix this.
Hold on. Let me. Okay, so I'm asking ChatGPT I said, please write a catchy and accurate one or two sentence synopsis for the film Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. Okay? And guess what we've got? It's given us two options here. That's nice,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, it always does that. Options.
So this is what ChatGPT says.
Yeah,
okay?
Pick one.
Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon is a martial arts epic where two warriors pursue a stolen sword, unraveling love, betrayal, and ancient rivalries. A tale of honor, romance, and high-flying action. That's what ChatGPT says. Here's the IMDb version.
Okay, great. We're getting three versions, guys.
No, just to make it absolutely clear to people what the film is. A young Chinese warrior steals a sword from a famed swordsman and then escapes into a world of romantic adventure with a mystery man. With a mysterious man. I kind of prefer mystery man. In the frontier of the nation.
Okay.
They're all sort of offering different things, aren't they?
Yeah, IMDb's got the order wrong because she does that. The mystery man thing happens in flashback.
That's true, but so it starts strong. It feels more accurate at the beginning.
Yeah, I think we all know who is the stinker out of the three.
Right, it's Letterboxd, right?
No, come on, don't say it.
Do you want to know what I thought about it?
Yeah, no, I do. I'm all ears.
Yeah, I thought it was quite boring. I mean, I've got very complicated feelings about it though, because
you're complicated.
I'm complicated. I'm deeply complicated.
You don't
That's
want
what
to be pigeonholed as like, yeah, you just didn't like it because you're thick. It's like, I didn't like it for a very special, complicated reason, because I'm very special and very complicated. Tell us how complicated your feelings of not liking it are.
No, the thing is, I don't like it now. I got bored by it now. I thought, you know, there's a lot of, you've said this to me already, but there's a lot of time between the action. The martial arts and the presentation of that, the fighting
scenes.
Wait a sec.
Don't spoil my porno thing.
I'm not spoiling it. Don't worry.
All right. No,
the martial, don't worry. I'm not going to, that's, you can
no,
keep
you've already
that bit.
Spoiled.
No.
Don't say I said
saying
that.
There's a long time. I wanted to attribute it to you because you did say it. I mean, I was already thinking it. But I don't want to plagiarize your text message. You claimed that by texting me.
Yeah, but then so. I was going to say that. It's like porn. It's like a modern
okay,
day
I'll,
porn.
Do you want me to give you space to do that joke in my bit now?
Yeah, just quickly.
Okay, yeah, fine. That's what you want. Yeah, okay.
That's what I want.
But now I found there's quite long spaces between the action, isn't there?
Yeah, exactly. And I was thinking, I was not just thinking, I've WhatsApped you this, so I'm going to crowbar it in.
We set that up so that you could say it, not naturally. But
all
no,
right,
you've,
all right.
you, no, you've disregarded it and you're just, you've immediately acknowledged the deception here.
I can't.
Let's try it again, but okay. We're going to keep this in the edit so that people know. The deception's all above board now. But now they want to hear the deception, okay?
Let's try and do it naturally.
Let me do that one more time for you, okay? There's quite long spaces between the action, isn't there?
Yeah, and I think I've always thought, like, with a lot of martial arts movies, they're quite like old-school pornos.
Right,
in that it's all, you know, there's a lot of story that you want to get through to get to the good stuff. People who watch modern-day pornography off your porn hubs and your streamers, they wouldn't be familiar with this, but back in the day, you had to watch a lot of story in your pornography. And it's very similar in the martial arts movies. Sometimes there's a lot of long story guff and you're like, yeah, when's the fighting going to happen?
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of buttering, isn't there? It's a real dairy heavy environment.
So I'm glad I managed to that just popped into my head and I could share that.
I'm glad you could share that too. And speaking of the cum shot scene, the fighting, the martial arts presentation, the big fight scenes, the choreography. I know you might talk about this a little bit later, but this film was choreographed by, wrote his name down, Yuen Wo Ping, who also choreographed the Matrix and lots of other famous martial arts movies. It's delightful. It's very well done. It's lovely to watch. I wish there was a bit more of it in the film. So that's my first thing. Bit boring. But the reason it's complicated for me is because I didn't love this film when I was a child, but I loved these films. And I will say that Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon was the first one I saw, and I was kind of enthralled by not the story, but by the themes, by the tone, by sort of fantastical, you know, semi-fictionalized ancient China. I'd always, as a child, been a really big fan of stories set in the Far East and that aesthetic, little kind of samurai ninja stuff. And some of my favorite books had been set there around that time. And then when what was the film called? The House of Flying Daggers. When that came out 2 years later, I think.
Yeah,
I loved that film. To the extent where, like, I rewatched it so many times, and I was excited 6 years later for that film Red Cliff to come out. Like, I watched all of those films because I just adored the aesthetic so much. So it's been interesting for me to revisit this because it brought a lot of those leaky bucket brain memories back, which hadn't actually gone completely and were just clinging to the bottom of the bucket.
How deep did you go? Did you go and watch, you know, your Iron Monkeys and Hero? And
I watched Hero.
Once Upon a Time in China.
I didn't watch Once Upon a Time in China. I didn't watch that. I watched Hero. I watched House of Flying Daggers. I watched Red Cliff. There was a couple of others that I watched that I don't think were quite as famous. And I always felt like... I always felt like I just wanted more of these films that I assumed were all made by the same people and by the same director. I mean, in many cases they weren't. Like this film obviously was made by Ang Lee. I think Hero and House of Flying Daggers was made by the same director,
Zhang Zimu.
But I just adored it. I wanted like more in. I just wanted to stuff it all in me, you know.
But why didn't you go and watch more martial arts films?
I don't know. I guess, I mean, I suppose I tried to watch some Bruce Lee films, you know, in those kind of teenage associations you have. What was interesting today was that I was reading a bit about this, and something that was made clear to me from my reading was that this film is a wuxia film, as opposed to a martial arts film. I think that the clear distinction is chivalry, right? Like there is martial arts in it, but the idea is of these movies is that the characters have a sense of chivalry. They have a meaning and a purpose. They're about service. They're not part of the aristocracy. They're not part of the government. They're kind of this weird, independent, almost underworld kind of comic book vibe character. So when I was a teenager, I just thought, oh, these are martial arts movies, or just like even more reductive, right? Like these are just like Chinese movies or Japanese movies, so I should just watch other ones like that. And I didn't enjoy them. I didn't like Bruce Lee films. You know, I loved The Matrix. As it turns out, apparently The Matrix can also be classified as a wuxia film. So I think maybe I just didn't know what I was looking for and looked in the wrong places.
Who says that? Because... I mean, a cursory Google, I've learned something, because it says here wuxia and kung fu are genre-specific terms, and martial arts is the generic term. So it's not wrong to call this a martial arts movie, but wuxia and kung fu are within that, right? Different kinds of genre.
What I was reading earlier said that it's like, it's wuxia, as you know, it's not that it isn't a martial arts film. They would call it like a wuxia martial arts film,
right?
But it is distinct from just martial arts, I don't know anything about it other than what I read earlier. I should just be clear.
No, that's good. I've now learned something. I never really... I've seen that word lobbed around.
Yeah.
Woozier.
Yeah.
Great spelling.
And yeah, on the Wikipedia page, it says there have been Western attempts at the genre. So, such as the 2008 film The Forbidden Kingdom with Jackie Chan and Jet Li. And then other movies, including Wuxia Elements, are the first three Matrix films. And Kill Bill is mentioned here as well.
But that's not got a style. Is that a style of fighting? I guess it is, because Kung Fu is a style of fighting.
It's a code of chivalry that usually requires Wuxia heroes to right and redress wrongs, fight for righteousness, remove oppressors, bring retribution for past misdeeds. There you go. It's a bit similar to the Japanese samurai Bushido. Here's a question for you.
Yeah.
If you could choose between one of these two things, which one would it be? Okay. Would you rather... I should have just started with that, because that clarifies, that includes all of the information, doesn't it, that I put in the preamble. If I just said, would you rather, as opposed to, if you could have one of these two, which of them would it, and then to say that. Sort of a waste of time, isn't it?
Mm.
Would you rather have mastery over a martial art? Not quite to the fantastical extent of the characters in this film. You can't run across trees and stuff, but you could be, you know, one of the best martial artists in the world, yeah? Or would you rather have like a really, really high level... solid understanding of the stock market and economics?
Oh, martial arts any day.
Really?
Yeah.
Tell me why.
Well, because just being able to kick the shit out of someone at the drop of a hat. It also looks amazing. The particular style of fighting. I watched Police Story 2, which is a Jackie Chan film.
Yeah.
I mean, talk about, like, the story is so much tripe. There's so much stuff to get through before the action sequences are fantastic in that, and particularly Chan is the kind of Buster Keaton.
Yeah, man, he's so funny.
Slapstick, so brutal, and then the whole thing is they did it. You know, he did it for real, and he's properly like he's always this good guy looking out for the little guy.
That's true. When he slides down the side of the skyscraper in Who Am I? That's one of my favourite cinema moments.
Yeah, and what I love about him is he's invariably running away from fights. There'd be like a gang of men, and he's running away and trying to get out, and he gets completely battered and stuff, but he always stands up again and he rubs his shoulders and his arms.
Yeah.
That's the martial arts I really like.
You want the kind of extra comedy martial arts.
Yeah,
where it almost looks like you're pulling it out of your ass the whole time.
Yeah, and you're just responding, and it's not an act of aggression. It's pure, and that's why I like, you know, prefer the Jackie Chan to something like the Crouching Tiger martial arts.
Very smooth.
It's so smooth, and yeah. Even when the bit that everyone banged on about
the trees.
This is just a bit wishy-washy. Floaty bollocks.
Yeah. I love that, though. There's a lot more of that in House of Flying Daggers, and there's a bit more about the techniques and the, you know, obviously it's all fantasy, but like I resonated with that as a child.
I wish I could have fit in the rewatch of House of the Flying Daggers. That would have fit in very well.
So okay, you're picking the martial arts, fine. How often in your life do you think something happens to you that where you would like to use that as a, you know, do you understand what I'm saying? Like, how often are you having to not do what you want because you don't know the martial art versus, you know, classic scenario, you're in the pub, someone says, what are you looking at? And instead of walking away and saying, nothing, sir, and doffing the cap, you might just say, I'm looking at you, you cunt. You know, how often does that happen where you would actually want to use the skill? Because my fear about picking that would be if you picked the economy one, you could be using that every day to emancipate yourself from society in a slightly different way. And the martial art one is cooler, but But how often do you actually get to use it if you're not going to be the aggressor, the attacker, unless you join UFC or something?
Yeah, but you can walk through life always just feeling that you could look out for people because you could turn it on. You could be a defender of the little guy.
But don't you kind of do that now?
No, I don't look out for anyone.
How often does a little guy need defending from a physical threat in your life?
Well, you see little whispers of it and then... And then you sort of keep your head down and you keep going.
I've done that.
A few times I might have... And I walked away from someone getting the shit kicked out of them.
Right.
But I would like to think... I imagine if that did happen, I'd worry that I'd bottle it.
Oh, like, man. Me too. Little... I'm so glad never to see anything like that. I don't want to have to... You know, the Spider-Man thing where, like, that you're walking along in New York, you look down the alleyway, someone's stealing a woman's purse. It's like... I'm 100% pretend that I haven't seen anything, right? And I've never feel bad about myself for a long time.
So then you could walk through life with your head held high. I don't care about money, man. That's just, you can use my knowledge of the economy. That's just going to turn me into a horrible little one of the rich arseholes.
Well, you could use it for good.
No, but they don't, do they?
Well, not they don't, but you could.
Yeah, I don't think so. I want to be the littlest hobo, but in kung fu form.
I think the reason those people use it not for good is not because they don't start out intending to, but it's because in order to learn all the things that you would need to learn, that you would get to learn just through a click of your fingers in this would you rather, it's the people that they have to be around in order to learn all of that. Yeah, they're around them for years. So once they've attained all this knowledge, they've done it through the lens of all these other compromised people. Whereas if you're just in a would you rather situation, click your fingers, you know everything, you're still you. You're still who you are now. So maybe you could use it, you could use it for good.
But then it would change you. I think that's the problem with the question.
Yeah.
It changes you. And I don't mind the knowledge of martial arts hopefully wouldn't turn me into some kind of psychopathic bully who goes around punching people for their dinner money, whereas the money guy, money changes people.
What do you think changes people more? Is it money or martial arts?
Money. Martial arts would make you better. Martial arts would make you equally, but you'd only get a good. You'd be a good person with martial arts. You'd be a bad person with money.
Okay, how about this? Click your fingers. Would you rather to have the martial art or have like a really, really high proficiency, like a, you know, really great musical instrument player of a musical instrument of your choice?
And they say, now that's a challenge.
Yeah.
Music.
Right, yeah, because it's better than martial arts, isn't it?
Music is.
Martial arts is really, actually, really quite lame.
Well, that's the best thing in Crouching Tiger is the Chow Yun Fat character. His philosophical musings. He is the hardest motherfucker, best martial artist. He's got this amazing sword. He's so amazing, and the sword is so amazing, he'll happily give the sword away.
Yeah.
Nothing kind of phases him. And yet, he knows his life has been kind of wasted. He has been yearning for the Michelle Yeoh character, spoiler alert, it doesn't end well for him, but it's one of those hopeful tragedies whereby he, just by knowing her and having close moments with her, he feels like he's had a little taste of the good life.
Sure.
And that's all quite nice.
That is quite nice. That's also why I like this form of the Wuxia film, as far as I understand it, because Ang Lee, he's not only has he said, hey, here's a few characters that are doing things with honour and have chivalry and have a code and a way that they apply their skills to the world, but he's also showing you the drawbacks of it too, because Li Mubai, the character you're talking about, and then Michelle Yeoh's character, Xu Lien, they love each other, as you say. They're sort of getting on in years. They're maybe in their 40s. They've never got together, but they're great fighters and they've worked alongside each other. And the end of the film, you almost feel as though, you know, Lima Bay's sort of final words are that he would rather spend his last breath talking to Michelle Yeoh and live alongside her, follow her around as a ghost when he's dead, instead of going to heaven without her. You know, there's almost a remorse that he's allowed his code, his wujia, to kind of get in the way of his love. So there's a nice, it's not an undercutting of it, but it's a recognition of the of what actually isn't great about this profession of a lifestyle as well.
Yeah, it's nice. Yeah, the price you pay, and then there's quite a nice thing between you've got the kind of grown ups, the adults, Michelle Yeoh and Chow Yun Fat, and then you have this Zhang Zi, who is this impetuous, angry, ferocious type character.
Yeah,
who needs to learn, and she needs to learn from her elders, and she makes mistakes, and she's it's quite nice.
Well, she wants to live the life of the heroes that she's read about in these stories, and yet here are the heroes saying maybe this wasn't the right way of doing it.
I don't understand what she does at the end, though. That doesn't make any sense.
Oh, she jumps off a thing, you know.
Yeah, but so what, she tops herself?
I don't think so. I think it's she floats off and is never seen again.
Right.
Because that's like what they say earlier in the film about the other mountain. The thing I think about that is that she's actually jumped off the wrong mountain. That's the problem. Because Chang Chen, Lo, her love interest, has told her earlier in the film, he points at a mountain in a specific part of China, and he says, oh, there's a story about this mountain, is that once, you know, there was a boy that went up there and his parents were ill and he wanted them to be better, and he jumped off the mountain. And if you do that with truth in your heart, God will grant your wish. And what happened to the boy was he floated off and he was never seen again, but he was happy because his parents were... The implication is maybe that he's dead, but that the parents, you know, they were better. But then Zhang, she's gone and jumped off a different mountain, Adam. That's a completely different mountain.
But also, what does she want? Like, because she's...
I don't know.
She fell in love with this guy, this kind of bandit character. A lot of smooching. And then she then thinks, oh no, I'm going to have the sword. I'm going to be my own... I'm going to be my own, like, agent of chaos and
I'm a bandit.
Yeah, and... She's going to kick the living shit out of everyone. But then she learns her lesson when the kind of bad witch who's trained her up tries to kill her. She then kind of sees a slight error of her ways. Michelle Yeoh sort of gives her some elder advice. Chow Yun Fat he's gone his way. So you feel like, oh, there's a future for her. She's going to, for Zhang, there's a future. She's going to choose something. And choose a good life, and then what? She jumps off a bridge.
Yeah.
For what?
I don't really know.
She had love.
Yeah. Do you want to hear something fun about Zhang?
Yeah. No. Tell me something interesting about Zhang.
Well, here's a fun thing about Zhang. I should caveat. I don't know much about Zi Zhang, but this came up in my reading. Yeah. Zi Zhang. She is one of the four people who are collectively known as the four Dan actresses. Have you heard about this?
No.
The four Dan actresses are the four most bankable actresses in China. That's what they're known as. The Zhuangzhou Daily first used the term. Apparently, originally, a Dan in China was a male actor who portrayed a leading female character in a Peking opera. So the term four Dan was first used in the 20s to refer to four popular Dan actors. But there's her, there's Zhao Wei, there's... Zhu Jun, and there's Zhu Jinglei, who I don't know these other three, although they appear to have been in lots of things. But it's quite fun, isn't it? And apparently the newspapers have all tried to coin and crown new Dan actresses over the last 20 years. But the people of China aren't having it, and the original four Dan actresses are still, they're still the four to this day. So I wanted to know, if you had to pick four Dan actresses, the most bankable for you, let's say you were making a film this year and you want stars to attract people, yeah? Who right. are your four Dan actresses?
This is a great question.
From anywhere in the world.
Yeah, but I'm obviously just going to go west.
Right.
Because that's not my fault. That's Hollywood.
Sure.
I would say number one's got to be Charlize Theron.
Yeah, you think?
This is my Dan list.
Oh, this is your... Yeah, okay.
And then obviously Emma Stone, of course.
Right.
And then I'd say probably Jennifer Lawrence. And I've got a real soft spot for Keira Knight. Oh, no, yeah. Kate Winslet.
Oh, Winslet.
Winslet.
Yeah.
There.
That's a nice... It's a nice list, I think.
I'm missing off, you know, your Chastains and your Julia Robertses.
I think you're missing Margot Robbie, who is the second most bankable actor in the world.
Yeah, but I don't think for much longer. I'm thinking about pure longevity, and I don't think she's got the range. And that's just one movie that's made her that bankable. She's got a very patchy filmography, and I'm not, as a producer of these movies...
Do you think so?
Oh, yeah, very patchy. She's starred in some real... She hasn't starred in that much stuff, and then she's starred in stuff that just disappeared. One... movie does not a movie star make.
No?
Yeah?
Yeah?
Well, actually, no. That's absolute bollocks. Rocky. Boom. The Terminator. Again. Barbie. All right, Adam. Shut your fucking mouth. Who are your four Dans?
My four Dans. I think Margot Robbie right now is definitely one of them. I feel as though she's definitely a draw to the cinema at the moment. And that's why she's, you know, being cast in things.
Well, yeah, let's find out. I think little test, next film she's in, let's see how it does, and then I'll serve up some humble pie for you and you'll fucking eat it.
Okay, well, that's fine. She's on my list anyway. Cool, old Sandy B, obviously. Big Sandy B's straight on the fucking list.
She couldn't open a wet paper bag at the minute, but never mind.
No, listen, Sandy B can open whatever the hell she wants, okay? Yeah, Nicole Kidman, she's getting right on my list because I love Nicole Kidman.
You love TV so much.
I just love like Nicole Kidman. She's just so good. She's really good.
So again, you're just doing who you like at the minute.
No, okay. They're who else bankable. She's bankable, I think, Nicole Kidman. Everyone's... The thing is, when you tell people there's a new movie out, they go, "What? Why are you talking to me?" And then you say, Nicole Kidman's in the film. They go, "Where's the closest cinema?" That's what happens. You know, and then probably Scarlett Johansson because she's pretty safe. I've got to have one safe person on my list.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Great. I like it.
But Sandy B's top of the list.
Should we chat about Ang Lee?
I'd love to talk about Ang Lee, please.
Have you seen much of Ang Lee aside from Pie and Crouching? Oh, and Brokeback, of course.
Pie and Crouching. I don't know. Why don't you take me through Lee?
Let me take you through Lee.
Okay, you take me through Lee.
Because this is the second time...
I've seen Hulk.
So this is the second time Aang has popped up on the show. And you earlier on wanted to stress that's not Aang's fault.
Well, the thing is, I don't know much about Aang. But the reason I said that is just briefly because... Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon has been semi-forgotten because it's part of a genre which just isn't that popular in the West anymore, that kind of had a moment that you know, isn't having that moment anymore. And Life of Pi, I think, was better known for its stunning visuals and its 3D. It was the film that lots of people went to go and see in 3D, for example. And it was known a bit more for those things than it was for it being a good film. So again, like that moment's sort of over and it's slipped into, you know... whatever, wherever it's gone now. I don't think either of those things are on Aang.
Yeah, I mean, he really, for Crouching Tiger, he really, really wanted to make one of these wuxia martial arts movies because he loves that thing. And he was giddy as a schoolboy to make this flick. And, you know, he turns up and it's pretty decent. It just happens to be fairly, fairly boring.
Right.
Let's go back. The first film that I think broke him... over in the States was a film called Eat, Drink, Man, Woman.
Right.
Which I've never seen.
No.
It's from 1994.
Uh-huh.
A retired and widowed Chinese master chef and his family live in modern-day Taipei. He lives with his three attractive daughters, all of whom are unattached. Soon each of the daughters encounter new men in their lives. When these new relationships blossom, stereotypes are broken and the living situation within the family changes.
Oh, it's like a Taiwanese King Lear.
Yeah.
I like that. It actually sounds quite good.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of food involved. And then from that, After that, he directs Sense and Sensibility.
Which is, I'd only just noticed that on this list, and that is an amazing film.
Written by Emma Thompson, based on the book of the same name, mm-hmm. not Emma Thompson. It's called Sense and Sensibility.
Yep.
What do you think of Aang's directing in that?
I think it's...
You just... Rickman, Hugh Grant, Winslet.
Rickman's very...
I'm going to get you. I want you to laugh, man.
Rickman's very sort of, you know, stiff in the way he's supposed to be in that film. It's very long, I would say, for what it is. It's
136 minutes.
Yeah, it's a long old way through. And I like it because I love a good period drama. And I think those two characters are terrific. I think we talked about this before. I don't love Hugh Grant in it, but I think that's a bit more about Hugh than it is about the film. And I think from a directing perspective, it's paced very slowly. It feels very English. You know, it's got that kind of slow monotonousness to it.
monotonous is a great word to say about a film you like. Very monotonous.
It's just slow. There's just so many scenes where you think, like, you get very used to watching modern movies, right? And this was made, what, in 1995? You get used to watching modern films where there's no time to breathe at all because every second of the film is important for some reason or another. And if that's not the case, then either you're really bored or someone's criticising it. I feel like with a lot of older films, and Sense and Sensibility falls into this bracket, I would say a third of the film, it's not that it doesn't tell you anything. It's just that it probably sometimes tells you stuff that you don't really need to know. It's not the most efficient route from A to B.
Mm.
It's a bit more of a winding English countryside, you know, horse and cart journey than it is a getting on the Deutsche Bahn in a Ferrari.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
I mean, that's why I've never watched it. It looks boring.
Right. It's not boring. It's not boring. It's just a different sort of thing. It's a bit like eating, you know, a sort of something that's covered in honey, you know, instead of just eating a chocolate bar. Do you get what I'm saying?
Sort of, but at least Crouching Tiger has some fights in it.
Right.
You know, is anyone...
Sense and Sensibility has some fights in it.
Mr. Titchfield or Mrs. McGuffins, do they ever, like, tear off their bodices and, like, you know, fly through the oak trees?
Eleanor
and...
Dashwood, she has a very... that's the character that Emma Thompson plays. She does a lot of fierce crying. That's very good. And, you know, there's some play fighting in it. And I'm trying to remember the name of Alan Rickman's character. Let's see if I can find it.
Colonel Christopher Brandon.
Yeah, Colonel Brandon, who is always ready to do fighting. You know, he's always ready for a good old fight. And Imelda Staunton's very funny in that film. She plays this. She's the daughter of this kind of daughter and mother duo couple who are always on screen together and who are always gossiping and laughing about everything. They're very good. Great pairing. So I think it's great, and I think Aang's done a terrific, a fantastic job. And what a bizarre film to direct 5 years before directing.
No, don't jump ahead like that.
That tells me that Aang's a lover of cinema and stories as opposed to a genre guy.
But after that, he does The Ice Storm
mm-hmm.
with Christina Ricci, Kevin Kline and... Joan Allen, you ever see that flick?
No, don't think so.
It was 1973 and the climate was changing. In the weekend after Thanksgiving, the Hood family is skidding out of control. Then an ice storm hits. It's a kind of intense, one of those intense family dramas, like a look at the American family.
Can I read you the IMDb synopsis, just because it's so different and really short?
Yeah.
In suburban New Canaan, Connecticut, 1973, middle-class families experimenting with casual sex and substance abuse find their lives beyond their control. Doesn't even mention the storm.
I remember quite liking it. It was very well regarded at the time. It's not chatted about at all. Oh, I might revisit it. 2 years later, 1999, he directs Ride with the Devil, which did very badly and was widely ignored. A Western, of all things, with Tobey Maguire. We can skip over that. That didn't do so well. And then after that, 2000, he goes and does Crouching Tiger, which was, I imagine, boffo box office.
We're going to find out.
It won Oscars. That I'm pretty sure that The Matrix got the West into... the mainstream Western audiences into kung fu and martial arts, and then Ang Lee, highly regarded art house indie director, he says he's going to direct one. The critics start fawning over it; they love it, and so it gets that it's at that lovely little sweet spot,
sure,
of critical acclaim, and it's a high art director taking a kind of a low art genre, and then the critics can pat themselves on the back, and it does well. Does a good job, and then after that he does The Hulk. It's not called The Hulk, it's just called Hulk. Which, have you seen Hulk?
Now, is this the Eric Banner version or is this the Ed Norton version?
It's Eric Banner, 2003, 138 mins. Oh man,
get
so
a grip
boring.
On it, Aang. Get them down. Come on, Aang.
There's a really funny, I remember he did interviews about this, and he would talk about how compelled and inspired he was by the texture of nature, like bark. And there are close-ups of he zooms in on bark, and you're like, what are you talking about? Like, I think because the Hulk's skin is hard and stuff, and he's like, you're the wrong man for the job.
He just loves bark.
I love bark.
To be honest, I'm a big fan of bark. You know, in those better cared for children's play areas where they have the soft bark chipping that is the floor.
Yeah.
Fuck me, man. Is there a better floor than a soft wood bark, a spongy bark, you know? What's a better floor than that? Maybe barefoot on a shag rug. But, like, what else is better than a soft, spongy bark?
I mean, your love of that flooring should really put you in line to direct the next Hulk movie. because it sounds like you've got the goods. He bounces back.
Yeah.
2003, big time, broke back.
Oh, 2005.
So you're thinking, I think, you know, a guy who's directed Sense and Sensibility, Ice Storm, Crouching Tiger, and Brokeback, he knows how to make a film, right? He's got some kind of sensibility. He can direct a flick.
Well, where's Aang gone? That's my question.
Well, following Brokeback, he did a film which I have seen, 2007, called Lust Caution. 158 minutes.
Yeah.
Get a fucking grip, man. It's very saucy and sexy, but very boring. But it's got Tony Leung in, who is a great, handsome actor. And then after that's Pi, as mentioned. And then the last two films after Pi have been real, real stinkers. There was the Billy Lynn's long Halftime Walk. From 2016, which is 19-year-old Billy Lynn is brought home for a victory tour after a harrowing Iraq battle. Through flashbacks, the film shows what really happened to his squad, contrasting the realities of war with America's perceptions. Now, the big thing about this film was he shot it at the high frame rate as Peter Jackson did
for The Hobbit. Right.
And that's all anyone talked about for this film. They said it looks like fake shit. And it just died on its ass.
Right.
And then after that, following year, he delivers up Gemini Man. I keep saying following year. 2019, he does Gemini Man with two Will Smiths.
Yeah.
Which actually is sort of okay, but pretty sort of shit. So that's Ang Lee. Is he particularly loved? Does anyone go, I love the films of Ang Lee? Maybe, but I think they'd be lying.
I mean, I love Sense and Sensibility and Brokeback Mountain.
Right, but you've never said I love the films of Ang Lee.
No, I haven't said that. I didn't even know until today that Sense and Sensibility was directed by Ang Lee. Or if I did, it was so meaningless to me such that I forgot it instantly.
Right.
So I don't think I do love the films of Ang Lee. But I guess Ang Lee has touched me at different times of my life. I was touched by Ang Lee as a youngster when I watched Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. I was touched by Ang Lee as a teenager when I watched Brokeback Mountain. And in more recent years, I've been touched by Ang Lee again with Sense and Sensibility. So in a way, Ang Lee's always been touching me.
No, Ang Lee's never really touched me. Richard Parker, he won't leave me alone.
Thanks, Joe and Alan, for requesting that I read Robert Frost's The Road Not Taken. Two roads diverged in a yellow wood. and sorry I could not travel both and be one traveler. Long I stood and looked down one as far as I could to where it bent in the undergrowth. Then took the other, as just as fair, and having perhaps the better claim, because it was grassy and wanted wear, though as for that passing there, had worn them really about the same. And both that morning equally lay in leaves, no step had trodden black. Oh, I kept the first for another day, yet knowing how way leads on to way, I doubted if I should ever come back. I shall be telling this with a sigh, somewhere ages and ages hence. Two roads diverged in a yellow wood, and I took the one less traveled by, and that's made all the difference.
All right, let's play the box office game. Now, listen, this is kind of a tricky one, I would say, for the film Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, which we know was released in the year 2000, Adam, 24 years ago, as I live and breathe. Now, I'd like you to tell me the brackets estimated budget, please, of Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon.
The budget for this is... I think they would have got some Chinese money
involved. I mean, there's quite a lot going on in the film. I'm not saying anything about the number here, but there must be a lot of cranes because they're doing an awful lot of flying around.
A lot of wire work.
And there is, you know, a lot of beautiful scenery. There's some location work. There'll be some, nice computer-generated imagery as well.
Does it have Hollywood money behind it? I don't feel like it would.
What would you classify as Hollywood money? What's the starting point of that for you?
Well, if they were making this kind of film, it would cost... They would spend... And hypothetically, it's got Will Smith in instead of Chow Yun-Fat.
Yeah.
Or Matt Damon. They've plopped Matt Damon into this film for some reason. So they're going to be spending 60 to 80 million.
Right.
Okay. I think.
Yeah. Aang doesn't roll like that.
I don't think so. So can they make this for 40 million?
Is you asking me that as a question?
Yeah, that's my statement.
Or is it rhetorical?
It's a rhetorical statement of like, can they? It's 40, right? Can they make it for 40?
The thing about Aang, very thrifty Aang, isn't he? He knows how to get a lot out of a little. That's what they said about Aang. And that's why he filmed The Hulk, because that's exactly the plot of The Hulk, getting a lot out of a little.
Yeah, but he would have had a 100 million budget on
The Hulk. Oh, yeah, but Eric Banner himself is quite small. And when he grows into The Hulk, you get a lot out of a little.
Right, so what are we saying then?
Oh, I'm just saying, are you locking in your guess of 40?
Oh, okay, so you're guiding me again. I hate, listen, everyone. I said 40. I don't like it when Joe guides me. He's trying to make me say less.
Lock it in.
Fine, I'll say 25.
No, lock it in. 25. Lock in your 40.
I don't want to lock it down. Why are you guiding me down unless you want me to go down?
I want you to go down.
Right, okay, 25.
I think there's more space to go down, to be honest with you. But
Jesus.
Let me tell you.
Could I say under 25? So I'm going to be flabbergasted at what you say now.
The estimated budget for Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon is $17 million.
Wow. 1-7.
And they got this film out of that.
Fantastic.
That, I mean, Aang is thrifty as hell. That is incredible. I think it's probably partly just that they aren't paying the actors, presumably, $20 million to make the film or whatever.
Yeah.
Maybe, would that not be a huge part of why it's cheaper?
Yeah, you're right. Because if, the, you know, add 20 on,
yeah,
then it's double, it's 40, isn't it? let's go on to what's the next bit?
Well, the next bit is, now this is interesting, because this is a foreign movie, insofar as it's not made in the United States, There are actually four recordings of box office figures on IMDb. The one that is not part of the game that we never do is the gross US and Canada, like the all-time gross, but specifically for US and Canada. We do gross worldwide. So I'm going to return to that at the end because I think it's interesting. This film is interesting in terms of how much it did or didn't break into American cinema as a foreign movie. But the next one for us is opening weekend US and Canada. So it's a smaller component of that bigger story. It's December the 10th, the year 2000. It's been a whole year since everyone was worried about Y2K. So everyone's chilled out now, and they're probably just going to the cinema, you know? 9/11 hasn't happened yet.
It's a different world.
How many people are going to, you know, does this get bums on seats, this little foreign martial arts movie?
Well,
in the US and Canada specifically.
But this is Ang Lee. He's going to get art house crowds in. So maybe it's similar art house crowds he's pulling in. 300,000?
Not too far off. 663,000 it made opening weekend. Pretty good, given that its primary opening weekend figures would probably have been at the Chinese box office, as opposed to expectations for US and Canada. So that's nice. You know, well done.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Does Joe's factor of 10 come into things?
Well, I don't think
it does. I don't think it can do.
I think this is an outlier, isn't it? This doesn't play by the normal rules, because this is not an American movie.
Everyone's chatting about it, and everyone's like, this is the one you've got to go and see.
Well,
ooh, Wuxia, Wuxia.
The question is, does it go to infinity and beyond with gross worldwide, Adam?
Oh, yeah, that factors in as well. There was another flick like this that just kept going and going. I fucking can't remember anything. I'm the leaky bucket boy.
Look, there's two parts to this game, okay? The first...
Gross worldwide
is okay, part one, but then I want you, as a secondary, when you know that figure, to guess what proportion of that is the US.
I think this makes $350 million.
Okay. That is a slight over-guessing, but in terms of the sentiment with which you've guessed, I think it's fair. This film made $214 million. Fantastic. What a great return for a $17 million budget estimated movie. My question for you, just as a bonus, is, and you can even answer this in terms of percentage if you want to, or guess the number that came from US and Canada.
I think 60 million dollars.
Do you know what? It was way better than that. It was nearly $130 million came from US and Canada. Ooh. And as far as I understand, Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon was the first foreign movie ever to make over $100 million at the US and Canada box office. So it was that's a real significant milestone for the history of film. So well done, Ang Lee.
Okay, good. Shall we play the game where one of us tries to catch out the other one on a movie they forgot?
I'd love to play that game. Is it my go?
It's your go, my friend.
Oh, my God. Right, I'm going to get you. I've got five goes, and if not, we'll go to the communal list, which amazingly we haven't done yet.
And if listeners want to send us a film to go on the communal list, please email us at moviesyouforgot@gmail.com. And also just your thoughts and feelings about us and what we chat about, corrections. We've say so many wrong things.
Oh, so many.
So
right, but here's my list, okay? I'm going to try and get you now. Shame. Fassbender. Ooh. Is it Mulligan? Yeah. It is Mulligan, isn't it?
It's Kerry Mulligan. It's Steve McQueen.
Steve McQueen. Fassbender's member. Some weird sort of incest vibes.
Yeah.
I could say the Cement Garden. Maybe I should throw that in.
Oh, I'm not going to forget that one. I might do a Joe and sort of say maybe semi... It's not nowhere near Plum.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel like a true forgot you forgot her.
Okay.
More of like...
We can hold on Shame. We can listen, as you well know from your long late nights, yeah? We can always come back to Shame.
Exactly.
The Curious Case of Benjamin Button. Now, this is canon forgot. Whether you forgot it or not is a different question. But this is dead center Plum canon. Plum with a B. Forgot.
You've embarrassed yourself, because you could have had a lovely little moment, a long moment of silence, but you had to kind of spill your your verbal beams everywhere.
Have I got you?
Just leave a moment.
Okay, let's do that again like we did earlier in the episode. Do you remember that bit earlier?
Yeah.
Let me do it again. But the audience knows, there's no deception because it's all above board, but now they get to hear what it would be like otherwise, okay? The Curious Case of Benjamin Button.
Oh.